Get this meeting started now. We're way behind as it is. Hi, my name is Paula A., and I'm your chairman for this afternoon. We ought never be organized, and that's exactly where we're at today. That's okay, we're here. I would like to open this meeting by a moment of silence, and I would like to follow that by the Serenity Prayer. Will you join me, please? God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Thank you. We welcome you to the Al-Anon Family Group meeting that we have here today and hope you will find in this fellowship the help and friendship we have been privileged to enjoy. We who live or have lived with the problem of alcoholism understand as perhaps few others can. We too were lonely and frustrated, but in Al-Anon we discovered that no situation is really hopeless, that it is possible for us to find contentment and even happiness, whether the alcoholic is still drinking or not. We urge you to try our program. It has helped many of us find the solutions that lead to serenity. So much depends on our own attitudes, and as we learn to place our problem in its true perspective, we find it loses its power to dominate our thoughts and our lives. The family situation is bound to improve as we apply the Al-Anon ideas. Without such spiritual help, living with an alcoholic is too much for most of us. Our thinking becomes distorted by trying to force solutions, and we become irritable and unreasonable without knowing it. The Al-Anon program is based on the 12 steps adapted from Alcoholics Anonymous, which we try little by little, one day at a time, to apply to our lives along with the slogans in the Serenity Prayer. The loving interchange of help among members and daily reading of Al-Anon literature thus makes us ready to receive the priceless gift of serenity. Al-Anon is an anonymous fellowship. Everything that is said here in the group meeting and member to member must be held in confidence. Only in this way can we feel free to say what is in our minds and our hearts, for this is how we help one another in Al-Anon. Would Ann come up and read the steps, please?
Right, Ann. Is there a whole bunch of Anns here? I'm Ann. I need the steps, though. Okay. These steps are used by members of Alcoholics Anonymous to achieve sobriety and spiritual growth. They were adopted by the Al-Anon Fellowship for the enlightenment and guidance of its members. So universal was the inspiration by which the steps were originally written that Al-Anon, in adapting them to its use, changed only a single word. In the 12th step, the word alcoholics became others. One, we admitted we were powerless over alcohol, that our lives had become unmanageable. Two, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Three, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood him. Four, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Five, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. Six, were entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. Seven, humbly ask him to remove our shortcomings. Eight, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. Nine, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10, continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 8, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood him, praying only for knowledge of his will for us and the power to carry them out. 12, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to others and to practice these principles in all our affairs.
Al's been asked to read the traditions.
Thank you. The 12 Traditions. Just as the 12 steps guide the individual in his striving for personal growth and spiritual development, so the 12 traditions state the group purpose and principles. Group experience indicates that the unity of Al-Anon fellowship depends upon adherence to these traditions. 1. Our common welfare should come first. Personal progress for the greatest number depends upon unity. 2. For our group purpose, there is but one authority, a loving God as he may express himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. 3. The relatives of alcoholics, when gathered together for mutual aid, may call themselves an Al-Anon family group, provided that as a group they have no other affiliation. The only requirement for membership is that there be a problem of alcoholism in a relative or friend. 4. Each group should be autonomous, except in matters affecting another group or Al-Anon or AA as a whole. 5. Each Al-Anon family group has but one purpose, to help families of alcoholics. We do this by practicing the 12 steps of AA ourselves, by encouraging and understanding our alcoholic relatives, and by welcoming and giving comfort to families of alcoholics. 6. Our Al-Anon family groups ought never endorse, finance, or lend our name to any outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary spiritual aim. Although a separate entity, we should always cooperate with Alcoholics Anonymous. 7. Every group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. 8. Al-Anon 12-step work should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. 9. Our groups as such ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10. The Al-Anon family groups have no opinion on outside issues, hence our name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11. Our public relation policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, TV, and films. We need guard with special care the anonymity of all AA members. 12. Anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all our traditions, ever reminding us to place principles above personalities.
Joni, she's going to read our ODAT thought for the day.
Until I understand the inner meaning of the 12 steps, my natural impulse is to resist admitting that they apply to me. I don't want to believe that I am powerless over alcohol or that I have allowed my life to become unmanageable, yet I know I must accept the first step before I can make progress. Although most of us do acknowledge a power greater than ourselves, we are shocked at first by the idea that we need to be restored to sanity, as the second step suggests. Yet an honest appraisal of many of my reactions shows me I have too often resorted to a futile and childish tricks to achieve what I wanted, what my thoughts distorted by fear, despair, and resentment, and my nerves overwrought. I could not think clearly nor make wise decisions. Today's reminder, each of the 12 steps challenges me to be absolutely honest with myself. They will make me ready to accept the help of my higher power in restoring myself to the wholesome sanity of a mature, reasonable adult. The 12 steps will point a way to God and his infinite wisdom by which I hope always to be guided.
I want to welcome you. I didn't do that at the beginning. We're glad that everyone's here. I would like to mention that this meeting is being taped. Also, there's an announcement in the Paradise B Room downstairs, 12:15 tonight. There's a marathon Al-Anon meeting. That's for everyone. We have two special speakers today. I think what I'd like to mention here is that we wanted to hear from two different point of views, I guess we might say, in how the Al-Anon program has helped in a situation from a spouse's point of view and also from a children's point of view. Our first one is Geneva.
Hi, I'm Geneva, and I am a very grateful member of Al-Anon. So when Butch asked me if I would speak, I'm certainly not a professional speaker, but I said, well, we're not supposed to say no when we're asked to do anything. But I did say yes, but then I vacillated. One day I was going to call him and say, Butch, I can't. The next day I thought, no, I can't. So anyway, I heard this person say once that God is not so interested in our capabilities as he is in our availability. So I don't have the capability, but I am available. So, anyway, I really don't even know what I'm going to say. I didn't know if we were going to have this meeting. I kept watching my watch. No, it's too late. We're not going to have the meeting. But anyway, my husband and I were married quite young, and for several years he played ball when we first married, and that was his first love. So his drinking wasn't too much of a problem for many years. But then after he stopped playing ball, I thought, well, I'll come first now. So when he stopped playing ball, that's when he started drinking quite heavily. And I think his drinking became a problem to me much sooner than it did to him, because I had two brothers that were alcoholic, and as I was growing up as a young person in our home, at that time we really didn't know what an alcoholic was. We thought they were just drunks, and, you know, it just, I'd get to the point I'd think, my mother just worried and worried so, and I said, well, if they don't care any more about themselves than that, why do you care? But little did I know. So eventually, my husband's drinking progressed, and I progressed, I think, more rapidly than he did. But I can't remember just when I finally stumbled into the halls of an Al-Anon meeting, and I was desperate. I was fearful. I was angry. And I, like so many, did not know what to expect when I came to the meeting. And I, like a lot, thought they had the magic word that would tell me what to do, and this person would stop drinking, and everything would be just real great. But they told me a lot of different things. And one of the things they said, that alcoholism is an illness or a disease. You can't start this person drinking, and you can't stop this person. And I questioned that. I thought, yes, but you don't know. So there were a few more things that I thought I would try, and I did. But that didn't help either. And I think the frustration of not knowing what in the heck we're trying to deal with, absolutely, I knew that he was a good man, and he really had been a good husband and a good father. If there were anyone mean in the family, it was me. Because I was trying so hard to keep him from drinking, and I did so many things that was just sort of ugly. But I did it honestly, thinking that this was going to stop him from drinking. And they said, take your eyes off of this person and put them on yourselves, on yourself, and go from there. And I thought, well, you know, I've been a good wife. Now, why should I look at myself? I've still got to look at him. But it takes time, or it did for me, when I first came into the fellowship. And as we learn and as we grow, we learn a little bit, I think, what we're trying to cope with, and then just see what we can do for ourselves. So I learned that if he wants to be miserable, I don't have to be miserable with him, and I don't have to go down the tubes with him. But this took a long time for me to learn this, because I had to guard this man when he was at home. I had to see everything that he was doing. And how do you release a person that you have watched all these years? So little by little, you know, a lot of them say, fake it until you make it. And that was what I guess I tried to do, because I was trying so hard to say, I love you, but it's your problem, and I know there isn't anything I can do. But I can do something for myself. I've got to feel better. So as time went on, I think it became a little easier. I don't say that I ever released him completely. I was always kind of watching out of the corner of my eye. But anyway, it took a long, long time for me to really realize that there was not one thing that I could do about his drinking. But by golly, I could do something about myself. And I was a great worrier. I was always projecting what's going to happen next week, next month, 5 years from now, whatever, you name it, that's what I worried about. And a lot of those things never happened at all. So anyway, as I feel that I grew on the program a little bit, and at that time he drank mostly on weekends. So if he started drinking Now, before Al-Anon, if he had one beer on Friday, my weekend was spoiled completely, whether he got drunk or whether he didn't. That was it. But as I learned then, and I thought, I don't have to sit and watch him do this. So I would go to our daughter's or go someplace else for the weekend. And I can't say that I wasn't concerned about him, but I didn't have to sit and watch him. And so I continued going to the meetings, and he really liked for me to go to the meetings. And he was always saying, are you going to a meeting tonight? Now, I don't know. I think he could drink in peace is what it was. But anyway, whatever the reason was, if I didn't have a way to go, he would see that I had a way to go. And but he really liked the people that he had met in Al-Anon, and then he would meet some of the fellas in AA, and he'd say, let's drop by and see so-and-so, okay? But none of the fellas ever mentioned AA to him in any way at all. They just had a nice conversation. So whatever it took for him, eventually he said he got sick and tired of being sick and tired, and he decided to come into the fellowship. And he also said that through the Al-Anon Fellowship that he felt that it was a help to him. And I can't praise this fellowship enough. I feel that I have learned so much. And I don't know, I feel like I'm all of your grandmothers now. I used to feel like mothers, and now I'm grandmothers. But anyway, when I was fairly new and people would say, oh, we've been in for so many years, I'd think, well, why do they keep going? But I know now why they keep going. And I intend to go as long as I'm able to go. And we do know that it is a spiritual program. And if we try to just live in the now, and that's a real hard thing a lot of the days, but I know that I have a much better day when I do. Just say, just for today, thy will, and try to carry this out. And try not to worry about things that maybe will happen and maybe won't. And all I can say is try, because it's impossible for me not to some of the time. But since we both have a program, and he lets me work my program, and I try to let him work his most of the time. I make a few suggestions. I feel that he could learn a lot in Al-Anon even. But anyway, we really do have had many happy years together. Now, not perfect years by any means at all, but happy years. And, you know, I was the one that would be mad and just wouldn't talk, just keep it all to myself. And I've learned, you know, I don't have to do that. I can get mad and I can say, I don't like this, or I don't have to accept this. And we can talk about it, and it really isn't that big after all. So it makes me much more comfortable, and I think it makes anyone else more comfortable to get it out in the open and to say what you feel and to get it over with. And it's not all that important for me to be right all the time. And I thought, my heck, you know, I've got to prove my point regardless. And proving a point, what do you gain? So I just say to myself, well, I know I'm right to myself, and you can think whatever you want to. So anyway, I'd just like to say that this has been a good conference, and I think we all learned something. And one of the reasons that I want to say that I continue to go, I still feel that I'm learning. I certainly haven't learned it all by any means. And then I got to remember, there were people there when I came, and how thankful that I am that they were there. And bless you all, and I love you. Thank you.
Thank God for the old-timers like Geneva. She was there in many of my meetings, and I'm glad she was there. Now, Nancy, yes?
Hi, my name is Nancy S., and I want to talk about growing up with alcoholism. I am an adult child, and I was born into alcoholism 40 years ago.
I can't hear you back.
Okay, I'll start over.
Did you hear any of it?
Stand in front of the mic.
Like this? Okay. This microphone is very intimidating to adult children, let me tell you. It looks like a big authority figure to me. But anyway, let me start all over again. I'm a recovering adult child which means that I was born into alcoholism. My father was an alcoholic. My sisters are alcoholics. My grandfather was an alcoholic. My grandmothers were alcoholics. My aunts were alcoholics. We have a lot of alcoholics in our family. And a lot of things happened to me growing up in an alcoholic home. And I used to think that that was really terrible. I used to think that alcoholism was the worst horror around. I was terrified of it. And since I've come to Al-Anon, my perspective about alcoholism has changed. What I'd like to say first is that for me, living with alcoholism for so many years, I learned a whole lot of skills. I learned skills growing up that I needed then to survive. In my family, if you didn't have certain skills, you wouldn't make it. And those skills were really good for me then, and I needed them. But what happened later was the skills that I knew so well weren't working anymore. And I didn't know what was wrong with my life. I didn't know why my life wasn't working. Some of the things that I learned to be a codependent. And by that I mean that I learned that I had to get my feelings of self-worth from other people. I was dependent on relationships. When I was 19, I married an alcoholic, and we had a really sick codependent relationship. I was dependent on him for my feeling good. And I'm still dependent on other people for my feeling good. If I walk into a room of 10 people and 9 of them think I'm great, I don't care one bit about the 9. I want that number 10 to think I'm great. And as soon as they think I'm great, I don't want them anymore. I'm going to go someplace else and find somebody else who doesn't like me. But so that's the way I lived a lot of my life. That was one of the skills that I learned. I had to be perfect in order to be okay. And I had a very rigid definition of what it was to be perfect for me. I judged myself without mercy. I had to do things just right. I can't be late. I can't make a grammatical error in speech. If I talk at a meeting, it can't be a nice average thing to say. It has to be a wonderful thing where people are, you know, dying to hear more or whatever. I'm real afraid of people criticizing me. I'm real afraid of angry people. I overextend myself to a great extent. I'm a workaholic. I have to I go to my job and I do my job, and then I used to come home and keep on doing my job, and I'd be doing my job 24 hours a day. I also learned to live in a crisis. My life was a crisis, and I learned how to do that really well. But what happened later on was when I didn't have a crisis, I felt really uncomfortable, and I didn't know how to function. So I learned how to make crises for myself so I could feel good. When my life was going okay, I was bored. I would wake up in the morning and I would think, there's nothing bad happening. This is going to be a really boring day. So I would sit and think of all the things that I could do. And I know that this now because I'm in Al-Anon. Before, this was just the norm. I'd be lying there thinking of the things that I could create that would really screw my life up. Then I'd have something to work on and I could have this big challenge and really get into my crisis. I felt responsible for everyone else. If I was in a group and somebody was doing something that was embarrassing, I just knew it was my fault. Somehow I had this feeling that it was my fault, and I was going to be able to make it okay. It was exactly the feeling that I used to have when my dad would be drinking and be embarrassing himself, and I would think, oh, I'm going to save this man. I'm going to do something to make it okay. I know that now after Al-Anon, but before I didn't. I thought that I was responsible for other people's behavior and that I could make it better. In my family, we were taught that you never joined groups. You could have maybe one or two friends, but they had to be friends for about 15 years before it was okay. We lived a very isolated life, and so I learned to be isolated. And so it was a really big step for me to come to Al-Anon, because my mother would have said, you're joining that group, you know, that shows that you're really kind of a weak person. You know, weak people need other people's help. Strong people can handle all these crises alone. I didn't learn to be intimate with people, because in my family, there wasn't any intimacy. So when I was growing up, I didn't learn how to do that. I was a very vocal member of the family. I have four sisters. I had two older and two younger. And I was always saying, this family's crazy. I was screaming, this family's crazy, things aren't right. And they were always saying to me, what's the matter with you? Everything is okay. If you would shut up, then we'll go on, you know, with our denial system and everything will be great. So I was taught to be quiet, although I never did really learn that one too well. I'm still not quiet. I learned to, I was attracted to people who were compulsive in any way, because that's the only kind of people that I knew when I was young. So as I got older, my sister used to always say, you have a bunch of crazy friends. I used to think that they were eccentric. they were crazy. And I still like that. I still am attracted to that kind of person. It was really hard for me to label my feelings and my emotions. I remember feeling really angry one day as a small child, and I wanted to tear everything apart in my room, but I had no idea what the name of that feeling was. So I had lots of feelings, but I didn't know what they were. The point that I would like to make is that I did learn all these skills, and they really were screwing up my life. But after I got in Al-Anon, I learned that I could get rid of these skills. I didn't have to use them anymore. The ones that I couldn't change, but I could also change my perspective. And a lot of these things that I learned were really good things. If I could just use them in a constructive way, if I could change my perspective of looking at them. It's a really good thing to be able to handle a crisis. I heard at a meeting once, actually it wasn't a meeting, it was a seminar on alcoholism, and this person said, if a nuclear war comes, I want to be in a room filled with adult children because they're going to survive. I love adult children, and I really believe that. I think that it's more than just surviving, because I can change all these things I learned into really good, positive things, and that's what Al-Anon is giving me. It's a new perspective. It's a new way of looking at these things. I learned to be empathetic to people's feelings. Now, I used to be compulsive about it and think that I could save them, but I don't have to go that far. I can just be a little empathetic and supportive. I don't have to, you know, go to all ends like I used to go. I learned to be loyal. That's one of the characteristics that I have. But I was so loyal that I stayed in a marriage 18 years longer than I should have. That is going too far with being loyal. So what I'm trying to say is that a lot of the things I learned were great, but I needed some balance, and Al-Anon is giving me balance. I mean, you can be loyal, but when somebody is, when you're having a relationship with someone that really is detrimental to you, then you don't have to go on being loyal. You can have a choice there. So what I'm trying to say is I can turn some of these characteristics into good things. And a lot of the things that I learned have really made me a neat person, a person that I like to be. Because I learned to care about people and to be empathetic, I'm a teacher and I'm a really good teacher and I work really well with very young children, infants especially. I can really get into controlling them. But I can have a feeling for them, and that makes me a good teacher. So that's something that I learned that I've been able to, since Al-Anon, to realize that alcoholism has been good for me. I have come to look at alcoholism in a completely different way. I've come to be thankful that my father was an alcoholic, because it has made me, it's not the only reason, but it has contributed greatly to what I am. I'm a real loyal person, like I said before, and I'm a good parent because of it. I used to be, before Al-Anon, really unsure of myself as a parent. And now I realize that because of my feeling for other people, that I am a good parent and I can do a good job, and a lot of it is because of my alcoholism, the family disease that so many of the people in my family have. So I guess to sum up, what I'm saying is that alcoholism isn't so bad, and actually it was pretty good for me, and I'm really grateful for it, especially because if I hadn't had an alcoholic father, I wouldn't have Al-Anon. And it's here, and it's taught me so much with the steps and the slogans, and the most important thing to me are the meetings I go to and the people that I have met in the program. And going and sitting there and sharing real, important, intimate stuff that I never got to do, and now I get to do it. And if I hadn't had an alcoholic father, I wouldn't get to do that. So I don't know if I've made myself clear, but thanks, Paul. Thanks. And thank you all for being here.
I want to thank the two speakers that we had, and oh, I relate so much to Nancy. I have a lot of those characteristics too, and I even seen some tears in eyes up here, and that's kind of neat. It's kind of a short meeting, but I think a lot was said here, and I know I enjoyed it, and I would like to close the meeting now, and could we all stand and say the Lord's Prayer, please?
Keep coming back if it works.